We're headed back to the Stanley Fenton Gates hotline where Braden Gall, who usually joins us on Wednesdays, making a Friday appearance from Athlon Sports. Braden, we've been talking the defensive side of the football today, and one of the biggest things we're trying to figure out is, outside of Henry Toa, who is Tennessee's best defensive player?
Wow. That's a complicated question. There might be somebody in the secondary at corner that might probably take exception to that, especially as an upperclassman in Thompson. But I think your guess is as good as mine after Henry, because I think there's just no question that he's an elite player, an elite talent. I don't think anybody in the front seven. I think they're dependable, nice pieces. One of these young guys could develop into a stud, but I think probably. I mean, is Bryce Thompson the one who's getting all the votes? I would assume he is.
Yeah, that was my vote. And Braden, it just depends on how you look at it. Is it based on what they've accomplished to this point? Then you got to default to one of those guys. Or is it one of the younger guys that we haven't seen develop that maybe you look at long term? If you're looking at the long term answer, who would be freshman, sophomore, any of those young guys that you might point to that has that potential?
Well, I mean, you look at the depth chart, and there's a lot of options, right? I mean, you've got Jalen McCullough, who's a kid that's got a ton of ability, Crouch, and a lot of linebackers, frankly. I think one of those linebackers is going to become a big-time player, whether it's in that sophomore class, Crouch, Peterson, Harrison, whether it's some of the freshmen that are coming in. There's plenty of opportunities there, and that's where you trust Jeremy Pruitt to develop guys, I mean, especially in the secondary, but even just in general on the defense. So if the things that we knew about Coach Pruitt coming into the job where he's a great recruiter and he knows how to coach up defensive players, if those two things are true, and it appears that they are, then I would expect a number of these players to develop. I do wonder about the defensive line. I know there's a lot of veteran talent there this particular season, but like you said, long term, I don't think any of those guys right now are going to grow into stars. There might be some nice pieces on the depth chart buried as young players, but I would not suggest, I don't think any of the guys up front are those players at this stage when you're talking about the best defensive player on the roster, you know.
Braden Gall from Athlon Sports joining us on the Stanley Fenton Gates hotline. Braden, we're at an interesting time right now, just in society and in sports and how the two relate to each other. What is the last week and a half been like for you as you've watched everything that's evolving and going on and hearing some statements, bold statements being made about taking action and this how that action can come to fruition?
Man, just a light, easy question on a Friday. I think, I mean, obviously I was very sad over the weekend. I don't know how you couldn't watch what was going on in our country and not be saddened over the last couple of weeks by what it is. And unfortunately, not one bit of surprise. We have not learned anything from, the Colin Kaepernick situation. We've not learned anything from Ferguson. We have not learned we just haven't learned anything. And you probably could say we haven't learned anything since Reconstruction, frankly. So I think we just need to take a moment to learn and, listen to people, listen to whether it's a friend or a family member, drop your guard, drop your heart, drop all your preconceived notions and just listen to people and share human stories, learn about people. I just think it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot of effort on a personal level, individually for each of us to sort of just say, I'm going to be better. I'm as a human being, I'm going to be better at treating other human beings in a better way, in a more loving, peaceful, kind, accepting, empathetic way, by just listening and being better. I think structurally, that's a totally different subject that I'm probably not even qualified to discuss, but there are many people out there that have really great ideas about how to structurally change things, which has to be a part of this. And so we all have to lift our voices up and say, hey, this isn't right. This is not who we are. We're better than this. And we have been better than this for quite some time now, and nothing sort of seems to change. So I think, sustained feedback is critical to the people that are in charge, and I just hope that feedback is productive and good intentioned, and with a kind heart and an empathetic view towards other people and their experiences in life. And it just it sucks to watch it all and just not be surprised that we are here again. Because nothing's changed and we haven't learned anything.
I think there have been some cool moments, though, at least come out of this to where you see glimmers of hope and real things happening. I give Missouri, and I've said it several times. I mean, not only did they do a march and kneel down, but then Eli Drinkwitz helped his players get registered to vote. You see Marvin Wilson coming out, kind of calling out his new head coach in Mike Norvell, and then coming out with an Instagram post yesterday. These are the three things that we are currently going to implement, and he laid them all out there. I mean, those are powerful moments.
Well, and this is where I, like, you know, we make fun of young people a lot, right? We joke about millennials. Like, I'm technically a millennial, but I don't really identify as a millennial because I don't feel like one. I'm old. I have kids. Like, I don't know how to work Snapchat, whatever. Like, young people are, like, we give them a hard time, and we joke, and we poke and all that stuff with young people, but they are truly exceptional. Like, I'm around so many of them with the charity, the work that I do here in Nashville, and like you just pointed out, you know, if you would have told me at 22 years old, I would have figured out a way to, like, systematically approach racism as a football player. I was worried about where I was going to have a beer that night, you know? And so I just think that the young people are incredible, and they will have so many extraordinary ideas that come out of this, in particular in sports. Sports has always pulled us through the lens of a lot of social issues. And I think certainly a locker room is such an incredible, diverse place of so many different people from so many different places that if you've ever played a sport in a locker room, at even the high school level, or the college level, you totally understand what it means to be in that group of just incredible diversity. And so I think that sports has always been there. And so I'm with you. I'm hopeful. I think Nashville is actually, in the state of Tennessee in general, despite a few things that took place early on, I think since sort of the Saturday night stuff here in Nashville, like the way protesters and police have interacted with each other has actually been extremely hopeful and really impressive to watch. Like, I think that, you know, I'm not bragging on Nashville in particular here, but I've paid more attention to it, and I feel like I've seen a lot more positive things in the last few days, this week in particular, after sort of the wildness of the weekend, a lot better than a lot of other cities are handling it. And so I don't know how it's been in Knoxville, but I think there's lots of examples of people putting arms around each other and just saying, hey, we're better than this. And so I'm with you. I am hopeful. I'm not surprised we're here again battling the same fight. But I'm with you. I'm very hopeful, and I do think sports are going to play a big role in bringing people together, because we all love sitting next to each other cheering on our favorite team. And that moment, you know, we're all, like, at our best, sort of. And we just sit next to each other wherever we're from, economic background, you know, gender, race, religion, whatever. Like, it just, you know, you're all unified in your love of one sport. And I think that's why sports has always been so powerful when it comes to some of these issues.
Right now, obviously for the media, not as important or impactful as the fans, but what do you think covering college football will look like for a media member, the differences that's going to be like this fall?
He's asking, yeah. let me translate that. He's asking, can access be any more limited?
right. Like, that's what's funny, because everybody asks, and we probably discussed this on the show. I've done probably 1,000 interviews the last couple of weeks, but we've probably discussed this, how different putting the magazine together at Athlon this year has been. By the magazine, athlonsports.com, by the way, that you don't, you know, we didn't have access to spring practices and depth charts and analysis and interviews and all this stuff. But, like, I immediately then just go, well, how much stuff did you really learn anyway, being around Nick? Like, you're not allowed to watch Alabama practice. You're not allowed to watch LSU practice. You're not allowed to watch Tennessee practice. So the little feudal dictators, they still run all the information. They still control it all. And so, you're right. The access will be even more limited. I've got plenty of criticism for the media as a member of the media. I think, you know, we do a lot of things poorly, but I think when it comes to you know, try to get information from coaches in college football, I don't think that's a media problem. I think that's a fact that the highest paid state employee for most SEC schools is the head football coach. And who's going to tell that person what to do with information? Nobody.
Yeah. Speaking of the magazine, you guys listed the top 10 biggest jumps from 2019 to 2020 in those preseason team rankings. Louisville at plus 51 was astounding. And then Tennessee's in that top 10 too. What stood out about that biggest jump, or even the biggest drop in those rankings?
So some of those, and we just did a whole podcast about it and kind of diving into why teams made big jumps or big falls. And so I do recommend listening to the entire thing, Cover 2 podcast, rate, review, and subscribe. But I think, like, Louisville, for example, is a product of how bad they were under Bobby Petrino at the end of his year. So the preseason expectations last year were so bad, they were, you know, 81st in the nation, right? Well, clearly that Scott Satterfield did a lot of really good work with a better-than-we-thought roster because, you know, Bobby Petrino, things had been so bad under him. So they jump up to 30th, and that's a huge jump, the biggest jump of any team as far as preseason expectations go. And really, this is a measure of preseason expectations. You know, Georgia and Florida are basically the same as they were last year. I think, you know, 3-8 maybe last year. I think they're 6-7 this year. And Tennessee goes from, I think, 47 to 26 in our ranking. So that's plus 20 spots, or 46 to 26, something like that. And in theory, you could argue that's cutting the deficit in half, right? Like, you were, from a preseason expectation standpoint, you were twice as far behind Florida and Georgia last year as you are this year. And I think that's a testament to the job this coaching staff has done putting together a roster and developing players. It doesn't mean there's not a whole lot of work to go. There's other teams that took huge jumps because they were so god-awful. Like, Oregon State jumped up 35 spots, but, like, that's because they were in the 90s last year. Now they're in the 60s. They're still not very good, but they were better than, like, really bad. So there's some of that. A lot of teams in the Pac-12 are dropping back, which I think is bad news for the Pac-12. You look at, you know, Washington's dropping a lot. Utah's taking a major step back. Two teams that have been sort of playoff contending type teams the last few years. Those two teams are taking major steps back. Colorado, Arizona. It's just not, you know, there's a couple of good teams. I like Cal, USC, Arizona State, but mostly Washington State even is taking a huge drop. The Pac-12 in general is really volatile this year. And then the one that stands out to me from, like, was in the playoff a few years ago and now is barely top 50 is Michigan State. I mean, Michigan State, the erosion of the program at Michigan State is just, it's tough to watch. Like, they were in the playoff 5 years ago, and now they're barely a top 50 team in America.
Well, and then when D'Antonio, when he retired, I mean, it was just kind of bad timing, too. I thought it left the school in a lurch a little bit. Hey, I know we're running out of time, but Brayden, I know you went to the University of Tennessee. You know all about the history of Tennessee. I got to get your thoughts on the passing of Johnny Majors earlier this week, and just what kind of crossed your mind whenever you heard that news that Coach Majors had passed?
Yeah, the first thing I tried to do was kind of recall conversations you have. You know, Pat Dye as well, passing with Auburn. I've interviewed him a few times, and you just remember your conversations is the first thing you think about. And I've talked to a lot of former coaches in my career, 16 years, as you guys have as well. And there are so many, you know, interesting personalities that tell great stories, and, you know, the Jackie Sherrills and the Gene Stallings and all these just sort of, you know, pillars of the past of college football. And I'm just not sure there's any of them that sort of have the way Johnny Majors carried himself and the way he interacted with people and the way he talked to people, the way Tennessee was in his blood from the beginning through the end, even with a couple of stops elsewhere and having great success at Pittsburgh and winning a national championship. You know, he's Tennessee through and through. And so I think there's a lot of guys that are, you know, quick with the joke and fun. Even at like 84, 85, 86 years old, you know, you can have a, you know, I remember Gene Stallings one time I worked with him, and he was just, you know, no opinions, no personality. All of a sudden the red light comes on. We're doing a broadcast, and all of a sudden he's, you know, he lights up like a Christmas tree. So that's not the way it felt talking to Coach Majors. It felt like he was himself all the time and genuine. And, you know, there's nothing I can really say that's going to add to his legacy. I think it speaks for itself. And as a person who went to high school in Tennessee and went to the University of Tennessee, it's hard not to appreciate and love all the things that he accomplished.
Subscribe to the Cover 2 podcast. And Brayden, tell everybody how they can get their hands on that highly coveted Athlon Sports magazine.
Yeah, athlonsports.com is the website. Pretty straightforward. Go right there at the top. Click the little button. Buy your magazine. We'll ship it to you. If you obviously in Knoxville, if you want a Tennessee cover, you can go out to bookstores and get it as well. Magazine stands all over the place. But if you happen to be a one of those rare Florida fans or Georgia fans and you want your cover, the website's going to be the best way to get it, and it's also a little safer as well. You don't have to go out there. So go get yourself a magazine, athlonsports.com. We obviously appreciate all the support this year during all this crazy stuff that we're dealing with. So athlonsports.com is the website.
And we appreciate you joining us every single week. That's Braden Gall from Athlon Sports. Have a great weekend, Braden, and we'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Thanks, Braden.
Absolutely. You guys too.